Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. T.S. Eliot wrote that April is the cruelest month. But if you consider holiday bills coming due and cold temps and dark days without the holiday lights, January is definitely challenging too. So we're looking at things that we're describing as resolution-y this month. Not hardcore, never again promises you make to yourself, but ways to make small changes that can help you towards your goals. So today we have one for all of you out there planning yet again to write that book that you've had in your head for years. Where do you start? Literally, where? At home, on the couch, in a shared workspace, or maybe you actually have a manuscript and now you need to know, what do I do with this? Our next guest is here to help. Courtney Mumm, a successful author in her own right, has written a comprehensive guide to navigating the tricky world of publishing. It's called Before and After the Book Deal, a writer's guide to finishing, publishing, promoting, and surviving your first book. Courtney is going to answer some questions for you that you can't find the answers to. Things like, how do you find an agent? Or to tell if you've been paid in adequate advance, as well as some practical tips for what to pack on book tour and how to promote your book on social media. Courtney's book launch is happening tonight at 7 p.m. at Powerhouse at the Archway. Listeners, you can get in on this. Are you an aspiring writer, a first-time author, or maybe you're an established literary voice? We want to hear from you. Aspiring writers, what questions do you have about the publishing process? And for those of you who have already been published, what's a piece of advice you wish you'd received when you were navigating the publishing world? Here is our number, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Courtney, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
What was the moment that you said, I need to write this book?
Well, I'll tell you. It was in 2014, and I was on tour for my debut novel, I'm Having So Much Fun Here Without You. And that book did unexpectedly well, and the publisher sent me on a, you know, real national tour, and I thought, well, I've made it. I'm going to go to these book events. There's going to be people out the door. I probably won't be able to find my way in. And often, night after night, it was very modest turnout. And I thought, I must be a huge disappointment. I mean, this is such an embarrassment. And I called my agent. I didn't want to admit to her, you know, I'm selling 5 books a night. Like, am I going to be fired? And she said, oh, no, that's normal. I said, well, nobody told me it's normal. And I started writing the book back then, trying to demystify what the debut novel experience was actually like. And now I'm 4 books into it, not just fiction, nonfiction, too. And I just realized how mystifying it is for people. And I wanted to help clarify the path a little bit.
We've already got calls on the line, but I'm going to sneak in a couple of my questions first. So what are some writing goals that you recommend setting for people who are listening right now, who are trying to finish up what they're working on, but they keep getting either distracted or even discouraged?
I think something concrete that I've found that really helps, and this is regardless if you're writing a personal essay or fiction or nonfiction, is to make sure that the middle isn't collapsing. People have a very hard time maintaining momentum through a project. Two quick tips to help you see if your middle is going to collapse or not. Does your project have stakes? My agent always likes to say, you know, you've created a beautiful world, but why am I turning the page? And is anyone changing in the book? Is there, or in the project, is there character development? That should help you.
Let's take Lisa. Lisa wants to get us going. Lisa's calling from Forest Hills. Hi, Lisa. What's your question?
Hi. Thank you so much for this segment. I love your show. It's really terrific. So I have a few ideas for a book, and I can't stop my brain from thinking so much to actually do something with it. So I'm just curious, Courtney, how would you even start? Like, is there a specific way to start, or I'm going to get your book like as soon as possible? But
yeah, I think so. Well, first of all, it's wonderful that you're having so much inspiration. You know, that's great. What I would do that I find really helpful is to, let's say you have 3 projects, boil each of them down to a personal essay length project or an article let's say under three, actually you should shoot for 1,600 words and pitch them around to literary magazines, online outlets, and see if you get any bites. See if anyone is going to let you write that article. And then when you write it, I'd actually encourage you to publish it online if you can, because then you can see live feedback. And in getting that feedback or rejections, you know, maybe no one goes for your pitch, those rejections can actually help light your path toward what you should be writing. And again, what I was talking about earlier with the middle, do you have three great chapters and then you have no idea where the project's going to go? If that's the case, that's a bit of a problem. There should be a beginning, a middle, an end. There should be problems that need to be resolved. I mean, this sounds like really prescriptive advice, but unfortunately, I find that it's really true. Even if you're doing a very artistic, non-commercial project, you still need to transition it into something that can be appreciated by someone who isn't you, who doesn't know you. So try to get some bylines, try to get some smaller pieces published to help you organize your own thoughts about how you will approach a more long-form project.
Sometimes I call that the sidestep.
Yeah, sure.
Like, you want to make a big step forward, but sometimes you take a sidestep, and maybe that's that article is your sidestep that then will allow you to go forward.
Absolutely.
And career is anything.
Totally. It's good to, you do need to check in with yourself and see if you have enough momentum in this project to make it a book. I have to admit, I wrote an entire novel that turned out it was just supposed to be a personal essay. But I had to write it. And it functioned beautifully as a personal essay.
Lisa, good luck. Michael is calling us from the Bronx. Hi, Michael. Thanks for calling All of It.
Thanks for picking me up. So, simple question. In 2020, how essential is it to have an agent opposed to self-publishing? Because I know it would, in the past, it's always been get an agent. But there's so many vehicles now to self-publish.
Yeah, absolutely.
You write about that a lot in the book.
It can be very empowering. So I actually self-published a collection of short stories in my late 20s. And I went on to have two books with the Big Five and two books with independent publishers. So one thing I want to say really quickly, because it's very important. If you self-publish anything, an essay, a novel, you can't go back through the traditional channels with an agent and a traditional publisher to try to publish it again. So if you are going to self-publish, which I think can be fun and empowering, make sure that it's not something that you just need to take a little bit more time to revise. If it does have potential, take the time to revise, maybe hire an editor to work with you, hire a manuscript consultant, because if there's any potential in it at all, you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot, right? But if you do want to be published by a traditional house, big or small, you still do need an agent. I would say that that's not always true for poets, but for most writers of nonfiction and fiction and even genre, you know, romance, literary thrillers, you do need an agent. The agent's very important. You do need that help negotiating contracts, which are becoming, this is good news for writers, but there's more opportunities now with audiobooks and content on television and whatnot. There's more contracts coming the way of a writer. So, you know, if you're not going to get an agent, you're going to need a lawyer. But self-publishing is a great option. It can be very empowering. It takes a lot of effort on behalf of the writer doing their own marketing. That can take up an amount of time that you might have no interest in spending.
Michael, thanks so much. My guest is Courtney Mom. Name of her book is Before and After the Book Deal, A Writer's Guide to Finishing, Publishing, Promoting, and Surviving Your First Book. If you want to ask Courtney a question, our number is 212-433-WNYC. We'll take a quick break, and we'll meet you on the other side. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, and my guest is Courtney Mom. Name of her book is Before and After the Book Deal, A Writer's Guide to Finishing, Publishing, Promoting, and Surviving Your First Book. You ask and answer a lot of very direct questions. one about the agent. This one's interesting. Is it worth it to have an MFA, to be part of an MFA program? Where do you come down on this?
Well, listen, I can only speak from my personal experience. I do not have an MFA. That being said, I worked really hard to create my own MFA. I live upstate, but I took a part-time job for a little while in my 30s, which brought me into New York 3 days a week for about 4 months. And I went to one reading series for every single night I was in New York. And I made a vow to myself, speaking of, you know, soft resolutions, I made a vow to myself that I would introduce myself, actually shake hands with one new person every single night. And within 3 months, I'd basically built myself a literary community. I mean, I'm a fairly outgoing person, so I had that going for me. But listen, with the MFA thing, I'm just going to be blunt. I think it comes down to money. If you have some sort of outside stream of income that's supporting you, or someone else is helping you pay for an MFA, and you don't need to jump into a career right away, well, why not go, you know? But if you have dependents, if you have bills to pay, if you really need a job that pays a certain amount of money right after grad school, I do think it can be a little risky, because the job market is very, very restricted right now for creative writing teachers. So for people who honestly just, you know, aren't rolling in the dough, what I would suggest is to start off by going to summer writers conferences. Tin House has an excellent summer writers program. Grub Street, there's Bread Loaf, there's tons of them. I list them in the book. And you can also consider a low residency MFA, which will only require that you be in actual residency maybe once or twice a year, and you can do it from the comfort of your home around your own schedule. And start out, just start out with the conferences, see how it feels, because some people, mm-hmm. it doesn't help them to get workshopped. By that, I mean, it's a scenario where you have maybe 12 people giving you direct feedback on something vulnerable that you've shared with them. This will become a necessary skill. You can't really become a published author if you can't take criticism. But when you're emerging, you might not be ready for it. Yeah. So dip in a little bit, go to a 5-day writers conference, see how it feels. If you like it, want more of it, off you go. Otherwise, read my book and save yourself some money.
One of the things you wrote from personal experience, which I think was really interesting, and I'm not sure many people understand this, is that you wished you'd known about the existence of editorial boards before you submitted any work. Explain this process to people.
Oh, gosh, this brings back difficult memories. Okay, so the way I thought that this worked, and again, this is why I wrote this book, because we have these dreams in our head and they don't actually fit with reality. I got an agent. Good for me. I worked on a book. She said it was ready, and out we go. We send it out. And what I thought was going to happen was that we were sending it to the 5 or so editors on the list, and they either said yes or no. That is what I assumed was going to go on. In fact, what's happening is that these editors, they could be dying to acquire the project. They have to convince an entire editorial board. They have to convince more or less the entire publisher, the people that are going to be putting your book out in the world, to spend money on it, and not just to acquire it, but over the year or so that it's going to take to launch it. So that happened to me. There was an editor I was quite fond of, and he couldn't convince the board to acquire my first book. And I thought, well, yeah, mm-hmm. A surprise.
But in some ways, it can also make you feel a little bit better. I mean, it's somebody yeah. that, like, if you're someone who gets discouraged by rejection, no, it's not. It's not just this one person who you really thought you had something going with.
Yes, 100%, because it's hard. You have these editorial phone calls where the editor who's interested will call you up.
So psyched about you.
They're very psyched, and they're also feeling you out a little bit. They mm-hmm. want to make sure that you're going to be, you know, easy enough to work with, right? And that you can take criticism. These things are really, really important. But you do establish camaraderie, and you can see yourself working with this person, not just on this book, but hopefully your next books. And then it doesn't work. So it did help me think, well, it's not this editor. You know, there's a bunch of faceless people I can be angry at.
My guest is Courtney Malm. The name of her book is Before and After the Book Deal, A Writer's Guide to Finishing, Publishing, Promoting, and Surviving Your First Book. Felicia has a really interesting question that is a question that is a very modern publishing question.
Okay.
Felicia, what's going on?
Hi there. So I'm a former reality TV casting director, and I wrote a memoir about my crazy experiences. And I immediately got an agent, and we got a proposal and sent it out. And I got amazing, great feedback. Or, I love your voice, and blah, blah, blah. But I see that you have no, she has no platform. There's no big social media platform. She's hardly ever on any of these things. Like, she has no followers. And they said, well, the thing they suggested is, hey, have her, like work on her platform. Or have her, does she know any, famous people? Because then that could, all this stuff. So we love her voice, have her write a fiction, and then we can, once she can transition. But you can't write a memoir unless you have a platform beforehand. So I got FeliciaHere.com. I put a web page up and everything, but that's not what they want. They want to see numbers. They want followers.
Tell
and
me
so
about
after.
Yeah, Tori, talk about social media. This is such
a sticky
thing. I mean, this is
the giant pressure of our age, and it's another reason I wrote the book, because the transition that we have to make these days from something that's intensely, intensely private, and then we put it out there in a public manner, is now magnified tenfold because we're supposed to be our own PR agencies. So the difficult truth is that, especially in memoir, where in theory your readers are coming to you because they want to read about your life experience, they want to get very close to you as a person, the difficult truth is that most people you're sending a proposal to, they are going to want those numbers. This is true in fiction as well. People get, not across the board, of course, but you will see people getting larger advances because they have a really significant follower count online. Now, I mean, I can devil's advocate this. Of course, from a business sense, for the publisher, it makes sense. You know, if a new untested author comes to you and they have 30,000 people that follow them really actively on Twitter, well, what they're going to think is, okay, well, this person, they're going to have 30,000 pre-orders for their book. But it doesn't always work out like that. At the end of the day, you still do need to have quality content. But I'm just going to be honest with you, in nonfiction, you are going to encounter these blocks. So I would give you the same sort of advice that I gave earlier, which is, don't kill yourself sitting there trying to artificially build your follower count. What you do, boil down your project into a pithy personal essay. Try to pitch it around to an outlet that has a really big readership, and write the very best essay you can, and then try to bring people to the platforms that you started through your own writing. If you're just sitting around tweeting all day, I don't know that that's going to help. But if you place an amazing article in Vulture, you'll start to build your followers, and you'll be working on your craft. And I think that you'll end up getting a lot more satisfaction on that way.
Good luck, Felicia. Let's try to squeeze in Joel here. Joel is calling us from Brooklyn. Hi, Joel. What's your question?
Hi. I'm wondering if it's the case, in your opinion, that for a first-time author, short stories and a novella in fiction are out of the question for an agent or a publisher, that it has to be a novel?
They're not out of the question, definitely not. If you look at the National Book Awards this year, there were quite a lot of collections that were either finalists or that were shortlisted. But the truth is that any agent that decides to work with you because of your novella or your collection of short fiction is hoping that you have a novel behind it, and they will... you'll have a hard time if they go to editors just pitching those works and there's no novel behind them. So, lie, make something up, come up with a good idea, but you will need to be prepared to pitch an idea for a longer form book, a novel or a memoir.
All right, let's get Elise from Brooklyn. She has a really good, straightforward question. What is it, Elise?
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
What's your question?
So, my question is, what are some recommendations you might have for vetting the right agent for a debut writer and their work, especially since they might have the impulse to just jump on the first offer that comes their way because they're not sure if or when it'll happen again?
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, absolutely. I jumped on the first. I'm on my third agent, and most of my friends are on their third, fourth, or fifth. We all jump on the first offer. Why wouldn't you? You know, it feels so exciting. Something that I've found, I mean, the market's only getting harder. I have found that you want an agent who not just likes your writing, of course, and your aesthetics, but is a pit bull in terms of negotiation, that's not afraid to talk about money. If you are shown a cover that you just can't live with, they're not afraid to pick up the phone and go to battle with your publisher. There are some agents out there who just think, let's just be nice to the editor, do what they want, da-da-da-da. If you can live with that, fine. But especially for women in this business, you want to have a business partnership, not just a buddy.
You also want somebody who's a little bit of the president of your fan club.
Right? Well, they need to be a president of your fan club, but they need to push you kind of, you know, agents
externally.
Need externally. Yeah, I always think of my agent as a physical body, like a bodybuilder. You know, she makes me work out when I really want to sit around and watch, you know, say yes to the trends.
Oh my gosh. Surviving. We've only got like a minute left. Yeah. Why did you use the word surviving?
Okay, the reason I use the word surviving is because publishing is a privilege. It's an absolute privilege. It takes a lot to get by those gatekeepers. But the minute you get that book deal, we're expected to be hashtag grateful all the time and not talk about the difficulty and the challenges and the pressures. But they're there, and our doubt and fear, these are valid concerns. So when your book comes out, you can't control how it does. You can't control what people think of it. And the fact that you can't control this material that used to be yours necessitates some survival skills.
The name of the book is Before and After the Book Deal, A Writer's Guide to Finishing, Publishing, Promoting, and Surviving Your First Book. I love this book. I wish I'd had this book 10 years ago, but it's going to help me in the future a lot. Oh, hey, Courtney, you. Mom, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me. I'm going to be doing tips via my newsletter, CourtneyMom.com. You can sign up, and we'll get more secrets out there.
This is all of it.